Today, households facing into the gale grit their teeth and hope. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, World's latest post covering finance and property news. Well, things are not particularly comfortable for households at the moment, according to my surveys. In fact, I've just updated my models, and today I'm going to take you through some of the latest from the analysis. I held off until after the RBA decision, and I also wanted to get an extra week of data, because of course things have moved quite quickly with regard to both the oil crisis and also interest rates. And in fact, I made a show the other day titled Financial Realities Hit Home After the RBA Rate Hike. It is unfortunately the case that we are going to see more hikes ahead. The market expectations are still suggesting another rate rise or two. Westpac pushed back their expectations till later in the year, but even so are still expecting higher rates ahead. So more pressure and pain for those, particularly with mortgages. But as we'll see as we move forward on this, the real stress on households is broad. It's actually including a lot of people in the rental sector, but we've seen a real tick up in those households with mortgages now really under the gun. And in that context, it is worth just noting that the RBA credit growth data that came out earlier in the month, this is to the end of March, showed that whilst credit for housing did continue to rise, it was actually credit for investment purposes that rose really strongly. Actually, one of the strongest rises we've seen. And so here is a signal that not all is well when it comes to what's happening with regard to banks and their lending. They're throwing a lot of money at property investors. Some property investors are still biting, despite the fact actually that yields on investment properties are continuing to decline if you look at it carefully. As I noted in my earlier show as well, the latest from Cotality shows that now there are price falls over the last month in Sydney and Melbourne, and Canberra was flat, although rises in other places. And it does look as though the steam is coming out of the housing market, despite the fact that, of course, prices below the first home buyer price cap have moved up a little stronger than those above. So what does the latest data from my surveys show? Well, just to remind you that we actually do our analysis using our core market model, and we take household survey responses, 52,000 in the model at any one time. That's a 0.5% sample. And we can slice and dice the data lots of different ways, as we always do, and also form a view as to where things might go ahead, looking at our scenarios. And actually, our scenarios become materially important now, given what we're seeing. So we can take the mortgage stress data, the price trajectory and history, the buying and selling intentions, the migration data, the economic data, put it into the core market model, run it through our scenarios, and at a postcode level, region, state and all Australia level, form a view as to what may happen. Oh, and in passing, if you're interested in the conversation about a particular suburb, I can do that via the one-to-one service. It's an individual confidential conversation. It's not financial advice, but I can look at the underlying trends and data. And in the current environment, people are finding this quite helpful. It's about an hour's conversation via Zoom or phone. And there is a cost involved because there's a lot of research to be done. I'm booking 3 to 5 weeks out at the moment. If you're interested, you can contact me via the DFA blog. Links are below. Now let's talk about the definition of stress, because of course there's a lot of rubbish being written about stress at the moment. A lot of people are still talking about defaults. It's not the same as stress at all. And others are using 30% of income as some magic number. But no, it's not. I don't use that mechanism. I look at it in cash flow terms, money in, money out. So, for example, if households have more outgoings and I exclude one-off discretionary items, like, for example, taking a holiday, compared with income, we define them as stressed. If they've got a mortgage, they're in mortgage stress. If renting, they're in rental stress. Investors with cash flow pressures are identified as stressed investors, and we can aggregate it to look at the total financial stress across particular postcodes. Now we can look at it both in percentage terms and in count terms. Generally, the count, the law of big numbers, I think is important. This shows you where the main pain areas are. The RBA put this chart together some time ago, highlighting the intensity of financial stress varies over time. It starts in the mild end, budget pressures. It can morph through to missing payments and ultimately to insolvency, and that's at the severe end. That journey can take 3 to 5 years for households sometimes. I measure stress at the mild end, at the budget pressure end, because what it means is that households essentially have the opportunity to decide what to spend on and what not to spend on and cut back. But of course, quite often, budget pressures also mean reaching for more loans, credit cards, buy now, pay later, and those sorts of things too. I capture all that in the analysis. So it gives us an early view of what may be happening down the track. And therefore, in a way, the way that I do the analysis is an early leader indicator of what trouble we're going to see ahead. And unfortunately, we are going to see more trouble ahead, I think, in the future. So let's start by looking specifically at the stress data in summary form to the end of April. What we saw there was that rental stress did come down very slightly. That's because we had some wage rises for low-paid workers. We had some more government support coming through for some there in the rental sector as well. And we've also got more people working more hours in the rental sector. But look at mortgage stress. There was a big jump up over the last month or so. It moved from around 50% to 53.3%. It was a significant rise, actually the most significant hike compared with February 2020, when it went from 32.9 up quite a lot. But this is a big deal. And if it sticks, as it's likely to stick, because of course more rate rises are likely to come, that means that more households are now suffering with pressure from their mortgages. It's also worth noting that the RBA analysis of the debt-to-income ratio, which is always a bit weird insofar that it doesn't necessarily take into account only those who are borrowing, has started to move up. So here is the April data, and I've highlighted in yellow where the numbers have gone up compared with last month, and you can see that actually across every state, the percentage of households in mortgage stress have risen. The aggregate average is 53.3%, and that translates now to more than 2 million households with difficulty with regard to their mortgages. That's an astronomical number. Rental stress at 73.4% equates to 2.2 million households. The investor stress just moved down slightly, but overall financial stress moved up to 49.7%. So what that means is out of the 10 million or so households out there, just under half now have financial pressures on them. Half of households are struggling to pay all the bills and are having to cut back and prioritise to try and get through. Now, when we look at it another way, this is actually based on our cohorts or segments. And you can see there that the largest count of mortgage stressed households are actually in the disadvantaged fringe around our urban centres. Perhaps no surprise there. Rental stress is widespread. Suburban mainstream, so ordinary Australians, absolutely caught, as well as the multicultural establishment. And it's worth highlighting that a few months ago, we were seeing the multicultural establishment holding the prize. Well, they still sort of do at around 89% of those with a problem. But it is actually the law of big numbers, so suburban mainstream definitely now having the problem there. And looking at financial stress again, disadvantaged fringe holds the prize with about 56.3% of households in that category in difficulty. But if you want to understand the highest proportion of households in mortgage stress, well, young growing families at 93.6% are absolutely up there. Now, these are people who bought recently, quite often on a 5% deposit. These are people with young families, mostly two working people trying to pay the mortgage and, frankly, leveraged up to the hilt. The rental stress is quite high in a number of different cohorts. As I mentioned earlier, multicultural establishment is right up there. And looking at the investor stress, no surprise to see that exclusive professionals and young affluents, who have the biggest proportion of investment properties, have the biggest problem. And overall financial stress is highest among young growing families. So whether you're renting, whether you are owning a mortgaged property, you have a problem. Now we can look at it at a mortgage stress level. And here are the top postcodes with mortgage stress based on the number of households in each postcode. So Liverpool, postcode 2170, is at the top of the list with more than 14,200 households in mortgage stress. Then Toowoomba in Queensland, postcode 4350. Wanneroo in Western Australia, 6065. People may be surprised about that, but WA, despite the rise in prices, they've still got a legacy of people leveraged up, and of course, leveraged up now to try and get into the extremely high-priced market over there. Campbelltown in New South Wales, 2560 is next. The Narre Warren in Victoria, Tarnet in Victoria, Roxburgh Park in Victoria, Pakenham in Victoria, all of which are high-growth corridors on the suburban fringe of Melbourne. Then we've got regional areas like Ballarat, for example, where there's an issue. Cranbourne, another of those on the outer suburban area. Berwick and Harkaway in Victoria again. Then back to New South Wales. Camden, postcode 2570. Riverstone, New South Wales, postcode 2765. And Armidale in Western Australia, 6112. And it's worth highlighting that in some places, like in Campbelltown, almost everybody is now suffering from financial stress with a mortgage. Now, that translates also into our modelling of risk of default. So over the next 12 months, we expect the risk of default by count to be highest in Cranbourne in Victoria, postcode 3977, Mandra in Western Australia, still there with success in Western Australia, Tarnet in Victoria, Roxburgh Park in Victoria, Armidale in Western Australia, Bundaberg in Queensland, Gosford in New South Wales, 2250, followed by Derrimont in Victoria, Wanneroo in Western Australia, Toowoomba in Queensland, Sampson in Western Australia, and Yatala in Queensland, and Clyde in Victoria, postcode 3978, with about 480 households risking default. And you can see there that the percentage, well, it's 4, 5, or even 6% in some areas. And in fact, the story is that it varies. But Mandurah in Western Australia has 6.3% of households still risking default over the next 12 months. That's a legacy of not just the last 2 or 3 years, but actually a legacy from about 10 years ago and counting. Rental stress was down slightly, but nevertheless, Melbourne, postcode 3000, with more than 14,700 households, had the prize, followed by Liverpool, 2170, Toowoomba, 4350, Southport up in Queensland, 4215, Tarnet in Victoria, Coomer in Queensland, Zetland in New South Wales, Ipswich in Queensland, Campbelltown in New South Wales, Westmeath in New South Wales, Derrimut in Victoria, Gosford in New South Wales, and Bundaberg up in Queensland. And you can see there that the percentage of renters with rental stress is quite high, with sometimes 80% plus or minus, but up in Ipswich, up in Queensland, 94%. And in Gosford, well, 100%. There, a lot of people are actually really struggling with the costs because the costs of renting are just so extreme. Looking at stressed investors, you can see there that yes, there are some stressed investors in some areas. It's a bit of a yin and a yang in a sense that if you have stressed renters, stressed investors may follow. Westmead in New South Wales, Yatala in Queensland, Bundaberg in Queensland, Cranbourne in Victoria, Toowoomba in Queensland, Hornsby in New South Wales, Leichhardt in New South Wales, Southport in Queensland, Paradise Point in Queensland, Dee in New South Wales, Craignish in Queensland, and Lane Cove in New South Wales and South Yarra in Victoria are all at the top of the list. And it's not a huge proportion of stressed investors, but some of those counts are, well, pretty big, more than 3,000 in a particular postcode. Finally, financial stress, the aggregate number is rolled up and we take account of rental stress, mortgage stress, and investor stress to give financial stress. And the postcode with the highest amount of financial stress across the country at the moment is Toowoomba, postcode 4350. Out of the 48,000 households there, 29,000 have financial stress. That's 61% of households in that area. Then Liverpool in New South Wales at 70%. Campbelltown in New South Wales at 80%. Tarnet and Hoppers Crossing in Victoria, 3029 at 56%. Cranbourne, postcode 3977, at just over 50%. And you can see there as we're going down the list that more than half of households in some of these areas have financial pressure. Unfortunately, the financial stress is really now gripping people by the throat. Now, it's also worth just reflecting on growths and net investment yields for investment properties. There are some postcodes where there are still good high gross yields coming through. A lot of the NT postcodes and Western Australian postcodes are at the top of the list, then South Australia. But you'll notice an absence of postcodes in the Victorian area and New South Wales. Funny that. And even Queensland has now slipped off the list. Looking at the lowest gross yields, you can see that postcodes in the Victoria areas, including 3356 and 3649, are there, and closer in Fitzroy North, 3068, as well as Buller in Victoria. So Victoria is the real pain point with the lowest gross yields at the moment. Now, gross yield, of course, is a comparison of the price for the property. Property, of course, has not gone up that much in Victoria over the last few years relative to the theoretical income that you can get from the rental property in gross terms. But the net yield actually is more important. That's the comparison between the rental return that you get after all the costs of the property. The highest net yields are in some areas of Victoria, Western Australia, Victoria, South Australia, Northern Territory. You can see there from Elaine, Brinkworth, Berry Springs, Cooktown in Queensland as well. So some of these areas, though, are not close in to the centre of town. So the conclusion is that some of the highest net yields are actually available in areas away from the main urban centres. On the other hand, the lowest net yields are, well, in areas that perhaps would not find that surprising. Pixon in New South Wales, Littlehampton in South Australia, Dalesford in Victoria, and so it goes on. Again, it's worth highlighting that there are significant variations, and whilst the gross yields might look pretty okay, the truth is that real returns, after you take account of the cost of the mortgage, insurance, management fees, and vacancy rates, mean that the net yields are quite often a lot lower. So that gives you a top line view of what is going on. I just want to share one other thing with you before I've closed this little show out. The first, we've covered the analysis. The second is the scenarios. The scenarios are actually becoming very important now because, of course, our scenarios are showing some sensitivities ahead. They're not forecasts. What they're trying to do is to give you a sense of what may happen. And I've updated my scenarios now. So we've got three still. The Goldilocks zone, that's the best case scenario. Well, in this one, we see rates staying at 4.35% until the end of the year, easing later. Inflation still is very sticky. Migration does remain hot. We still get first-time buyers continuing to buy. We don't get a recession in Australia, but we see wages now slowing below inflation. But then we get a lot of government handouts. Watch the budget next week. The base case is a, well, so-called soft landing. It's not really that soft these days. The next rate rise is likely to come in perhaps May to 4.6%. And then there's holes after that. Inflation then eases in line with RBA expectations into 2028. We get wage rises slower than inflation. We get higher unemployment. We get a recession in Australia. Migration falls to around average. And the worst of the nightmare scenario, and this is the one I really worry about now, we see further rate rises actually up to maybe 4.85%. Inflation steps up. The Middle East situation continues to deteriorate. Unemployment rises. Wage growth stalls. And later we do get some rate cuts, but migration drops below average and we have stagflation in Australia. So those are the three scenarios. I could run other ones, but those are the ones I've gone with this time. And if we look at that, here is the overall story across Australia. So in the best case, there is still a small upside to the average property movement over the next 3 years. Only a small one. The base case is a bit of a fall. and the worst case, a very significant fall down around 34%. And units will tend to follow on, although the falls may be a little lower for units. Well, ACT is looking pretty sick now, even in the best case, maybe down 5% over 3 years. The base case scenario is down 20% over 3 years, and the worst case is a fall of more than 40%. Now, that worst case perhaps is unlikely, but it's worth just bearing in mind gravity and house prices look to be interacting ahead. Units following on, again, falling a little less. New South Wales continues to go sideways in this scenario. In the base case, there's a fall. In the worst case, a more significant fall. And units following on. Northern Territory, still some upside, 13% over 3 years in the best case. But the base case is going sideways or a small fall. In the worst case, a more significant fall. And units, again, following on somewhat closely. If we look at Queensland, there is still some upside over the next 12 months, up maybe 2 to 3%, partly driven by the Olympics. But if you look over 3 years, 4% is what we're looking there. The base case, though, is a fall of around 10% over 3 years. And the worst case, a fall of 31% over 3 years. And units following on. South Australia, yes, some upside, although the rate of momentum is likely to ease. In the base case, a bit of a fall, down 9.5% over 3 years. In the worst case, down 30% over 3 years in units following on. Tasmania, more likely to fall, even under the best case scenario, down 5% over 3 years, or 21% in the base case, and 41% over the worst case, units again following on. And in Victoria, very little movement, best case scenario. The base case, a fall of 16% and 36% down over the worst case, and houses probably falling a little more than units ahead. And then Western Australia, yes, still some upside, but levelling out, 6.8% over the next 12 months, but only 9% over the next 3 years. That's the best case. The base case, a fall of 5%. The worst case, a fall of 25%. And units, again, following on with a fall that's slightly lower. And it's worth just looking at one particular segment. So young growing families, I've highlighted those as the most stressed. Well, across the country, we think it's likely that prices for properties owned by young growing families will fall over the next 3 years. Not a lot in the best case scenario, down 4%, but risk falling 19% in the base case and 39% in the worst case. And units falling, but not quite as much. Now, I will make another live show on this and specifically look at those individual postcodes. So if there are postcodes you'd like me to cover in the live show up on Tuesday, put them in the chat below. I've got a couple from the previous conversation that we had that I haven't yet incorporated. I will do that. But there is an opportunity for you to add specific postcodes in. If you put them in early enough, I can also then look at the price movements in those particular postcodes, as well as the broader issues of stress and looking ahead at where prices may go. So drop the comments in below. Just to close out this, I think it's really important that households understand things are going to remain sticky for quite some time. Governments will make some attempts to help. There'll be more handouts. We're seeing this already, of course. The budget will have more of them. But if interest rates continue to rise, pressure on mortgages will continue to build. We are seeing more properties now coming on the market, which is interesting. So some people are deciding to sell and to try and get out. We'll see more of that. And my expectation is that ahead, things are going to get quite difficult. And we'll just make the point that if you do have issues, particularly with debt, the Debt Counselling Service, National Debt Helpline on 1-800-007-007 is a really good source of help. And I do recommend that. It is important that you actually take ownership of your financial position and think about the debt. And I will make the point that banks often will encourage people to extend, go interest only. But with everything we're seeing at the moment, that could be a slippery slope. And indeed, recent research from ASIC suggested that it tended to just move the problem rather than solve the problem. The hardship schemes the bank offers are designed, well, frankly, to support the banks rather than households. So we are, I think, in a rather uncomfortable situation. I'll keep tracking it in my surveys. I'll update you as I go. And on Tuesday, I will go into detail down to the postcode level. So join me for the live show, 8 p.m. Sydney. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.